from the trenches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. My name is David Boyer from Sequel CFO, joined here with Paul Meisner from Freedom Mentoring and Five Ways Group, and we are brought to you by the awesome team at BGL, Australia's number one corporate compliance and superannuation software. Paul, we had a great episode last week, lots of good feedback. Thanks for getting in touch, listeners. This week's show, though, is going to be huge.
It seems like every week gets bigger. Hello, David. Hello, listeners. Hello, all. Pleased to be here. Heatwave, David, in Melbourne. Accounting industry heating up. The conference season heating up. Should call it the expo season rather than the conference season. But
call it the you're being sold to season.
Yeah, exactly. But, David, let's not... in-depth topic, only 7 or 10 shows into this new format where we try to announce it. David, it's your rant today.
That's my rant today.
Your call to arms.
Accountants, be warned.
About? Do you want to give us a preview?
No, stay tuned.
Right.
No, accountants, be warned. I think that we are blissfully unaware of potential dangers lurking beneath the water. We have royal commissions into all sorts of industries. We've got parliamentary inquiries. We've got trial by Twitter. And we're just sitting there trying to increase our fees through value pricing. We'll discuss it later. Let's get into best on ground. Paul, what have you got?
David, a story out of theblaze.com online thingo. Charles Schwab Corporation CEO Walt Bettinger. An interesting thing, this is about hiring. This is a story about a CEO who takes every new hire out for breakfast, gets to the cafe early and asks the cafe or asks the waiter to deliberately mess up the order of the prospective hire to get a tip. Promises him a tip, wants to see how the new candidate handles having their order mucked up, whether they're gracious or whether they're... I think that, David, that's an interesting take on it. I certainly, not only in hires, just in people I meet, observe the way they treat waiters and waitresses and that kind of stuff. But anyway, an interesting take on it. I thought was, there's something...
Definitely about... 10, 15 years ago, I know the law firms used to deliberately get coffee orders wrong when they were doing their graduate sessions.
Nice.
To see how people would respond.
Same thing.
But yeah, but not to see... I don't think it was to see if they're a nice person. It's to see how ruthless and authoritative they are. That's what those commercial lawyers wanted.
Probably.
Back then.
If you don't tear that person a new one and sue them.
What do you mean you got a latte and you ordered a flat white? Unacceptable.
there was another one that whose grad program gave them drinks. To see which ones...
Got drunk.
Basically. Which ones could sort of respectfully have one or two and which ones just went... Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Your turn.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Don't go ahead now. Good golly.
All good. Moving on. Accounting suite. Presumably accounting software. Don't really know. Billing themselves as is your QuickBooks alternative. Again, this is off the back of Intuit coming out with their live bookkeeper, Bookkeeping Live, whatever it was, that was covered extensively on social media. Accounting Suite came out with some posts, and in fact, the front page of their website says, "We won't take your bookkeeping and tax work." So a pretty direct use, not dissimilar to Xero's commitment to the bookkeeping industry. Another accounting software basically jumping on the bandwagon of Weeby Team Bookkeeper.
I never heard of accounting suite before. Logo, I'm not sure if it's a Labrador or the northwest coast of Africa. It's a bit confusing.
Looks like the guide dogs. It reminds me of the guide dogs.
It does look like guide dogs, yeah.
Because it's a... Anyway.
The very clever SEO gimmick from accounting suite here are the meta tag on this website's QuickBooks, which I think...
Look at you, going over and above,
is
David.
I can't remember if that was illegal, and I remember we looked at this thing once where were you allowed to use your competitors' trademarks in your social or your SEO strategy?
They have used the word QuickBooks on their website and put TM next to it. Anyway, interesting.
But I tell you what, I think you should be able to sell your product without explicitly naming your competitors. That's a general marketing belief that I have. Although, you know, sometimes you need to stretch it a bit. This QuickBooks thing's so fascinating because it hasn't had a dent here, it hasn't had an impact here. And clearly, though, in the States, people are just panicked about it and everyone's jumping on the board to respond.
It certainly, it got beaten up a fair bit into a lather in the US. Anyway, I'm going to keep going because I'm on a roll. Blockchain, David, the once unhackable darling of everything, was going to solve all. I'm pretty sure it was going to order our coffee. I'm pretty sure it's going to just replace everyone.
It's regrowing my hair as we speak.
Is it?
It is.
Your hair is on blockchain.
Blockchain hair regrowth.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to that one.
We're just waiting for people to verify its existence.
Not enough people agree that you should have your hair back on the blockchain. Ethereum Classic. Ethereum Classic. So it's a decent name. You know, it's not the whole blockchain. It's not Bitcoin. But one of the cryptocurrencies that's out there. So very quickly to backtrack, a lot of the marketing does talk about blockchain and says that it's unhackable. Now, nothing...
The safest.
Nothing is unhackable, and as it was pointed out, I think we mentioned on this show, and I got a sort of a 101 up at World Congress of Accountants from some of the crypto people. What you have to do is you have to control or infect or in some way control 51% of the computers that are running the blockchain. Now, admittedly, in a highly distributed ledger, this is... I'm not saying it doesn't. It's not extremely hard, but we can no longer say it's not impossible because an attacker had to somehow gain control of more than half of the network's computing power and was using it to rewrite the transaction history. This is big, Dave. Like, we've talked about the relatively slow adoption of blockchain and Bitcoin.
Extremely
and
slow
crypto
adoption.
Crypto compared to television,
yeah,
laptops,
other actual
mobile phones.
Innovations.
This is another one. Yeah, like, you know, it's nothing is unhackable.
Well, the funny thing about this story is you picked this up from MIT, so the doyen of technology innovation a little bit, MIT. The hacker stole $200,000 from a coin, Gates.io, which is a Coinbase competitor, but returned half the money a few days later. So either it's a thief for the conscience, it could be a teenager who didn't understand what they were doing, went, oh, crap. Going to give half it back. It could be someone who just wants to prove a point. Hey, this is hackable. I've done it. You know, they've gone onto the dark net to show off who they are with their hacker mates.
Yeah, and you're probably right. Like you rarely see half of it returned. It's kind of it's like a winning fee. It's like winning a competition. It's you would have paid me that to try to break it.
Yeah. Well, if I dare say that if the person who hacked blockchain wants to come good. And work for, you know, what we saw at World Congress of Accountants, the good hackers.
White hat.
White hat hackers.
Yeah, I think so.
You'd be worth a pretty penny for big corporates wanting this guy girl to do their security.
Exactly. Do you want a shot, David, or do you want me to just keep going?
Well, you're reading worst as best, so I don't really understand what's happening with the flow of our show today.
I just was keeping going. Have I moved on? Anyway, they can be bests as well.
I think the blockchain one's best because you return the money.
Oh, there you go.
Thief for the conscience, that's what we're
doing. Fair enough. Good. Sorry, you go into your best, David. Long week here.
I'm really sort of interested. We keep saying that Australia's really been, we phrase it, that we're leading the world on tech adoption, definitely accounting cloud adoption. And I found a little bit of nugget of proof, a little bit of social proof. Kevin Fitzgerald, who used to be my account manager, I think he was my first account manager at Xero, now regional director of Xero Asia, puts up on LinkedIn, we get a lot of requests from our accounting bookkeeping partners about running events for SME clients. It's really important to prepare and execute your event well. We've put together this course to assist you in achieving this. This is what the cloud accounting scene in Australia looked like, felt like, smelt like 6-7 years ago. It's carbon copy. It's a carbon copy strategies. It's running the events for the clients. The Xero Partner Program used to give you a budget so that you could pay to have a client event. They could come and learn about accounting. And now it's being rolled out across another country for roughly the same purpose. And it sort of proves that what Xero did was right. The way they engaged with the partners early on to get the rapid adoption that they did worked. And it's great to see it being rolled out in another country.
Absolutely. No.
Did you ever do events? Did you ever run events for your clients?
No.
You just said, here's what it is. I'm Paul Meisner, do it. Look at my combi.
Wow. Wow, that was the worst imitation of myself I've ever heard. David, I started with no clients. So I only had clients because they wanted to come to zero.
Yeah.
I didn't have a book of clients to convert, but certainly saw that strategy. I mean, I think the great Wayne Schmidt started that. He big in his events, big in the event playbook. And certainly for existing clients, it is a great way. If you can get them there, it was always hard back at other firms I did to actually get them to turn up. But yes, keep going.
Took the train in this morning. Very rarely do I take the train in, Paul. I did today. And you know what? I got here on time. So are you okay? Because I'm not...
Well, I didn't. I'm glad you did.
Anyway, I was sitting on the train this morning and three graduate-looking men, young, dapper-looking gents that look like they're at a big four accounting firm or maybe a consulting firm, are standing around and one guy says to the other, one guy says to the other guy, it's a nice shirt. He goes, thanks, I just got it from the tailor. The other guy goes...
Tailored shirt?
Yeah, tailored shirt. The other guy goes, oh, I'm getting a tailored shirt now. Not this one, of course, but I'm getting a tailored shirt as well. Oh, yeah? What buttons are you getting? What is going on here? The other guy chimes in with, nice belt. Yeah, thanks. I just got it. Oh, of course, I don't wear belts. I just get pants to fit. And I thought, you guys are just... Thank goodness I'm not like this. Thank goodness I'm not in the corporate world anymore. But it was a good example of, Paul, the bro culture. The bro culture that happens in corporates. An amazing video has been released by Pixar, the Disney animation company, called Pearl. And it is a story of a little ball of yarn that rocks up for their new job in a heavy bro culture environment. And what this, and it's representative of anyone who's different, a female in this case, or a very soft person in this case. What Pearl has to do to become cool with the guys and hang out with the guys, she's excluded from lunches, but then she dresses a bit sexily and all of a sudden she's invited to lunch. And then, you know, finance says, we need to do this. And Pearl says, stuff finance. And they all get around each other and welcome her into the team. And then, you know, she changes to fit into the culture.
Right. So I'm trying to work out where you're going. Yes.
And then somebody else comes and it's a rinse and repeat, and Pearl changes the culture of the firm. I thought it's great because video to tell the story of bad culture is really interesting, and it's done by Pixar, so literally the best animators in the world. We don't often think about our culture. We don't often think about what it's like for a new employee to start and what their journey looks like. Ron from BGL said to me, you know, we went to this conference and we realised culture doesn't just happen. We have to take control of it and we have to make it happen. And so BGL have got these really great initiatives in their business to make it a more appealing space. But I love seeing the video to tell the story, Paul.
I will watch the video.
The next video is bloody awesome that I saw. This is fantastic. A video up on Twitter, Kylie Parker brought it to my attention. You know, we always talk about why get big, why grow?
Yeah.
Like, do you really want to grow?
Yep.
A great story that turns out to be an ad for Chipotle, the Mexican franchise chain over in the States. Where a guy and a girl start off competing selling lemonade and orange juice on the street, and they turn into two global behemoths.
Right.
And then they work out that, hey, this is all crap. There's no natural lemon juice. And, you know, they shrink back down and they become best friends and they run
all right.
a small... They run a food truck. So they do the gamut of the growth story.
There you go.
What I want to see more of, Paul, the reason I'm putting this in my best, video and great animation to tell complicated stories.
Okay.
Really interesting communication, and not something you and I probably have the ability to do.
Kind of the stick figure animations videos were big 3 to 5 years ago. You know, everyone used to have that voice. In fact, I don't know, Click to Convert had one. My conversion company way back in the day had one, yeah, sort of 7, 8 years ago, I think. Yeah, certainly they've taken a step up. Check those videos out. Links in the show notes.
Worst on ground.
Right. Well, apart from the fact my blockchain hacked was supposed to be worst, but it could have also best because, as you said, David, you know,
I saved the show, Paul. I saved the show.
Just well done. Pitcher Partners. This is a story that has been doing the rounds. Accounting firm ordered to pay $3 million in costs plus $5.5 million in damages for deceit.
Yikes.
Pitcher Partners, a big firm, had a bad egg, I suppose you could call it. Certainly, you know, not related to the whole firm. But one of their now ex-directors was found to have almost every crime in the book, David. Didn't get the documentation right when applying for a grant. When the client challenged it, said they did get the documentation right, then recreated documentation to try to tell the client that that's what they'd submitted when they hadn't really submitted, ended up costing this business service business or logistics company business, can't remember, grants worth about $600 a year. But then obviously that behaviour to then, you know, instead of putting your hand up and copying it, let it go on and on and on. And certainly $8.8 million is a big whack for Pitcher Partners for the behaviour of a rogue director.
Paul, I this is published in my business, Momentum Media's My Business publication. It's also up on their Accountants Daily one. The bad stories make it to the general business publications. This is going to tie very well into our in-depth, Paul, because how do you think the average Joe public out there thinks when they hear stories about this about accountants? It's not good.
You know, what I think is the deeper issue here, David, is, and I think we liken this to when sole agents or sole practitioners do it. And I think the difference here, and the difference here that worries me is there was presumably a team of people who saw this. There was more than just one director acting rogue. Now, I clearly wasn't involved, but when these things happen in bigger organisations, David, what worries me is not just the behaviour of one person. It's if there was a team of people, did someone under them raise it with them? Did someone under it raise it with HR, with another partner? You know, how sometimes, and the real risk here is that it goes deeper into the organisation. You know, I'm not, there's a prime example in the Australian courts at the moment, David, which is, you know, sort of, we don't want to link it too closely to that. But if this was reported up the chain, and again, the firm just rallied around the director, not saying that happened, but you've got to assume there is a team of people working on that case if it's a grant application. There's got to be five or six other people who know that they didn't create that document.
That the director falsified the document.
Yeah, or that they didn't do it properly once they found out, and presumably
well,
the team...
It goes back to what would happen to Pitcher Partners if you called out a partner for falsifying a document?
And
would
did,
you do
and
it?
Did anyone? This is
would
the
you
thing.
Do it? It's like whistleblower, you know, you've got the ATO whistleblowers going to serve six concurrent life sentences.
Was there a team under them that said something or not? That, I think, is the question Pitcher Partners
would you,
needs
if
to...
You saw, if you were a 3-year, so what's that, like an intermediate, would you call out a partner for falsifying a document?
It's very hard without being in the situation. And certainly, in a job market where you want your job. I think I certainly would to them. I think I certainly would to the direct person. I don't know whether I'd go to another.
Third year, so you're pretty...
I would be fine saying, look, I don't feel like this, to the person who's doing it. I don't know whether I'd then go to HR or go to another partner. But, you know, raising...
I once called a director of a company I worked at a cowboy.
Yeah.
Not the greatest career move of all time. Anyway, what else have you got? Worst on ground, Paul.
I'll keep going.
People taking money under the table, maybe.
No, this is an interesting one. And I just want to declare, ironically, I want to declare a conflict of interest here in the Bill Edge. So this is a AFR article about accounting regulator chairman Bill Edge still being paid by PwC. So he is the current chairman of the Financial Reporting Council, who are the government's independent advisor on audit quality. Now, I know Bill, I had previously served with him on the CA Regional Council, so I will declare that connection. As part of his exit from PwC, he was still being paid. Now, it's not a payment for current services. He has no role at PwC. there is no connection apart from being still being paid a sort of akin to super, but it's not paid through a superannuation scheme.
It's like an exit arrangement.
It's an exit arrangement. So the issue here is that it just doesn't look good, like in terms of a perception. So at every meeting of any, you know, standard, in fact, every committee meeting I've been at in the last couple of years, and I've been at a lot, the first item on the agenda is, do you have any independence issues? Now, the issue for me here is Bill Edge has made the decision not to disclose it. And I think in the article he says, to my recollection, I've never disclosed it.
Pretty honest.
But exactly. Why don't you at the first meeting say, I have no role at PwC, but there is an amount going into my bank account every month. I have nothing to do with them. It's part of a contract I signed a long time ago. But you at least put your hand out. And that's the problem for me. The problem isn't that I think he's conflicted. But this is, if you lose the appearance of independence, you can't be independent.
Yeah, so it's part of the partner retirement plan that he gets from PwC. So it doesn't sound like it's anything untoward.
He doesn't walk in their office. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't get any insight on what they're doing. But and his point is, everyone knew that I was ex-PwC. I just think, how someone, when, you know, every single meeting is, are there any conflicts of interest? You don't bring that up.
But also, as somebody who's on a regulator and who sit on industry committees, you think that they understand, one, the importance of independence, and two, that it's not just okay to say everybody knew. There's a process, which is declare it, and you haven't ticked the box on the process.
Yep.
Not a good look.
Exactly. Right, David, your worst on ground. Hit us.
Receipt Bank. Often in the good books, Receipt Bank on our show, I think they do a lot of really great content marketing. I think there's still some tickets available to their Hamilton an Island retreat / junket / get away from the husband and wife.
Are they selling tickets or do you
have to qualify?
You have to qualify for points. Yeah, yes. So some of the marketing is like, have you reserved your spot? And I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm still not going to buy 38 ledgers. So anyway, keep going.
There's other ways you can refer people. Anyway,
gotcha.
They've got an article called Pre-Accounting, Why Small Business Can't Ignore It. Pre-accounting. It's a new brand or a new service line of accounting that Receipt Bank's really trying to push. And they define pre-accounting as a new concept focused on getting your data ready for accounting. In other words, this is the often tedious work of searching through receipts or invoices, organising them, and typing all the data into a spreadsheet or software. And it starts as soon as a purchase is made. Now, Paul, I'm no great historian, but does this sound like bookkeeping?
It sounds like automated bookkeeping.
Well, no, that bit doesn't. The often tedious work of searching through receipts.
True.
So then they go through some examples, explain what it is. They do not use the word bookkeeping at all on this page. They're really talking about pre-accounting. Now they're saying that, well, the new journey of that is taking a photo of your receipt with your smartphone. Now they take you through the digital journey of what bookkeeping is, and they're trying to call that pre-accounting. They're calling it pre-accounting for small business. The reason why this is worst on ground is I've been a huge advocate of a new accounting service line called Virtual CFO for 5-6 years now. Started the Virtual CFO Association. Now, I've never had Receipt Bank's budget on their marketing budget, and we know they have a good one because they do some great marketing. But it's been really, really hard to make the SME market aware of what this service line is.
Yep.
And very often going to clients and they'll say, I love this, I want this, I had no idea it existed. And then we had a problem that virtual was a very bad part to have in the phrase.
I always thought it was the good part. But anyway.
Well, because it's not virtual. We're actually part of an executive team. I think it's part of the stuff the accountants do, where it's watching the dashboards from your office and reporting back.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but we're...
I gotcha. Okay, anyway, interesting.
Separate topic. Anyway, so then I do a Google search for pre-accounting, right? Now, you would think that Google has worked out to bring up accounting-relevant information for me, given how much time we spend producing content for the show, Paul. I get something from Sutherland Accounting written in 2017, dictionary.com, and then I get basically a bunch of RMIT University, a bunch of university courses and 2 or 3 posts from Receipt Bank on it. So it's not something clearly that's got a lot of content and awareness about it online. Here's the danger, and this is from my experience calling myself SQL Virtual CFO. As a firm, if you start saying you sell pre-accounting, you're invariably going to have to say to your client, oh, it's bookkeeping. We just do it a bit differently. So what's the point?
I would be interesting. I'm gonna. Let's get on Twitter to Receipt Bank and try to help us. What is the difference?
What's the difference? And how does it actually? But how does it help? Other than selling more Receipt Bank subscriptions, how does this new word, which is just bookkeeping but using technology,
which is just bookkeeping if you use Receipt Bank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it help the client? Because as I keep saying, Paul, the client doesn't care what I use. They just want a good experience, a good outcome. They just want the job done.
Yeah.
My next, Paul. Anything to add to that, mate?
No, I just think it seems like a marketing term to me. Another one.
The conversation, academic rigor, journalistic flair. Nice website. I like checking out late at night when I feel like arguing with someone. Have an article titled "Robots Star in Ads But Mislead Viewers About Technology." As soon as I read this, I could relate to it straight away. All the ads for AI and machine learning and have a photo of a robot, you know, a physical hand metal made in dad's garage type robot talking to us and engaging with us. And it's misleading because this isn't what they are. You think about the robots that you use most regularly. Your Google Homes, little box, Alexa, whichever one it's going to be. The robot that works out how to do the account coding in Xero isn't a robot. And it talks about how it's misleading and it actually does damage because it creates a fear factor. People are scared of this human-looking Terminator. One of the ads in the post is for a Super Bowl ad that TurboTax did with this really scary-looking robot and with sort of this fake Haley Joel Osment face on it. And the sentiment's great. It's saying, well, you're never going to do tax because you don't have any emotion and you need emotion to do tax, which is a message that, Paul,
it's a great ad.
It's a really good ad.
Respect.
Well done, Intuit and TurboTax, for doing that. But it does create this fear barrier between what robots and technology does, which overall slows adoption.
Which is why I prefer the term bot. You know, I think a bot is something that lives on your computer rather than a robot, which does have a physical manifestation. Obviously, it's far easier in a marketing sense to apply. But I'm with you, David. It plays into that fear rhetoric, and especially when you're talking about a computer program. An AI doesn't have a physical representation it's a computer. So
yeah, the only robot you're actually going to have is your Romba vacuum cleaner.
Exactly. And it doesn't look like a robot. You know, the C-3PO or R2-D, C-3PO, they're not going to look like that.
No.
Right? So anyway, all good. I agree with you, David. There you go.
Bad show, Paul. We're just agreeing with each other.
I know. We're going to have to. I'll have a word with myself. The next week, listeners. Good apologies for agreeing with my co-host.
But thanks for listening, everyone. We reached number 3 on iTunes last week.
Last night? Yes.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
Very, very happy. All right, David.
In depth.
Called it. Come on, David. Go.
All right.
Come in off the long run.
Accountants, be warned. The world at the moment is anti-establishment. We are about as establishment as it gets. Collecting tax for governments, chartered accountants, certified practicing accountants. We are the institution. We are mostly made up of middle-aged white men still. At the top level, absolutely, that is mostly what we are.
Bookkeepers not so much.
But bookkeepers not so much. And I'm not necessarily addressing this at bookkeepers to be that specific. We have royal commissions into banking, into payday lenders, into aged care. There's a royal commission into mental health being announced in the next couple of days.
Disability?
Royal commission into disability. There is a parliamentary inquiry into franchising. These are old established business models, franchising, payday lending, that's been around since, you know, the days of Rome on the streets. Royal commission, banking. These are established industries that are being questioned and being changed. And what's the findings, the ones that we've seen? The little guys are being found out. We have a very important role in society. We have public trust. I'm my client's trusted advisor is the most proud thing an accountant will ever say.
But apparently we've got to become it, David. Apparently we haven't always been, despite every poll.
Well, let's get
already
into
having
it, because
it.
But now what's happening is, whilst we have this, and whilst we have very profitable business model, Paul, average net profit of firms is 30% still.
Yep.
It's extremely profitable.
Small firm.
Extremely. You know, how many clients do you have that's got a bigger net profit than 30%?
Not many.
Despite all that, you know what the accounting response is? An Alex Malley scandal. You need to value price, which means that you charge one person a different price for the exact same piece of work that you would charge somebody else. does this sound like the banks and the way they're charging processes? We have accountants charging commission payments on fees like the R&D offset.
And that's a big, that's
spectacularly
a scary
failed
one, yeah.
for PwC, which had to sack their whole major R&D partners because they got it wrong, because they were incentivized by the wrong thing, Paul.
Correct.
They're incentivized to make money for themselves. And we saw commission payments slammed at the Royal Commission in the bank.
We are lucky it's a smaller part of our industry. It's not like a whole industry.
But I'm just talking about little touch points and trying to put a trend together. You know, I've been involved in chats online where accountants are seriously questioning the value of a T-ledger. I don't know how you can understand a set of financial accounts without understanding T-ledgers.
I think these are people that, largely that are selling marketing and sales. Apparently we've got
to go real accountants. No, real accountants asking that question. But then on top of this, you have consultants saying you need to market, you need to capture more value. More value? I've got a 30% net profit.
Yeah.
More is potentially unfair.
And very small churn in clients.
Small churn in clients.
You look at software companies that have a massive churn, David.
We have profitable businesses. We have a pricing model that creates profit. People say there's downward pressure on pricing, yes, but there is so much efficiency if you're running your business in the cloud, which more than compensates. Bo Gordon from GrowthWise, Steph Hines' firm, reckons you can get a 40% saving on margin saving if you really go to the nth degree of digital. Now, you don't have to go that far.
But for them, and without a Bo, and Steph, is immensely talented.
Talking about the opportunity that's out there,
but it still doesn't just happen. Actually,
you need to invest in it and resource
without it. Without a bow,
agree.
You don't get a third of that.
But as a small firm, you can go get a consultant. You can go to Clarity Street, or you can get these. You can go to Alan Fitzgerald, and they will help you do it and realise these gains in your business.
True.
But Paul, what I'm getting at with
the first year, not so many gains.
Because it's an investment that has a return over time.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is we need to be very careful about where our status is in society, because we're trusted, we can't abuse it. And you know what makes me worry, Paul? Like, we bring this up so often, don't we? 50% of tax agents get work-related expenses wrong. That's one deduction. Imagine the other problems and mistakes, and imagine the pressure that comes out there when people start to see, oh, actually, I can't trust my accountant. They don't know what they're doing. So this isn't a warning. This is a call to arms. Get our houses in order. Get the advice that we're giving our clients in order. Do not do things we're not experts in. I don't do tax, Paul. My franchisees do not do tax. We are not experts in it. We're aware of it, yes. Could we muddle our way through it? Probably. Master Tax Guide's still around, isn't it?
Pre-tax.
Pre-tax.
Call it pre-tax.
Pre-tax.
David.
We could do. Well, yes, Paul. CFOs do pre-tax.
You're doing pre-tax. Isn't pre-tax. That just accounting?
Exactly.
I've invented it. That's it.
So it's a call to arms to make sure our house is in order, because it would not surprise me if, we're only a handful of scandals away. Yogurtland last week, the partner this week with the $3.3 million settlement, the PwC R&D claim. How many of these things happen before somebody says, hang on, let's have a look?
I'm with you, David. I really think, and for me, it is a... We are in such a strong position, and always have been. This isn't new. I think technology strengthens that because it's brought me closer to my clients' numbers physically, doing the same work, having deeper conversations only because of the more real-timeness of the data. But for me, what worries me is, and this is for small firms particularly, is if we are distracted by this focus on needing to market or needing to be on social media or needing to do... events or know our clients' coffee preferences or talk to people as people first, not whatever the hell that means. Like, if we actually don't get the tax return right, if we actually don't save our clients' tax, if we actually don't manage the relationships with the tax authorities so that their water, private parts, etc. doesn't get cut off and so that their businesses don't get shut down, if we manage their relationships with their bank and we're, there to support them, if we don't get what we actually do right, and as you said, Dave, the work-related expenses, if the tax authorities are coming at us and saying, this is our work to lose, forget about this whole robots are coming, QuickBooks is going
to
take over your clients.
100%.
This is, if we do not keep our eye firmly on what I would call the technical skills ball, I've used the latest in online software, David, for 9 years. I've had to fix as many T-Ledger-based errors in accounts than I had previously.
I actually did some accounting last night, some pre-accounting. Oh, sorry, I did some pre-accounting.
You did?
Last night.
You messaged me, David, on some you. Quite
I was,
simple...
I was messaging everyone. Oh, I messaged the Let for questions, I was messaging you.
I feel so special,
Paul,
David.
The find and recode feature, which I've never really...
Amazing.
Unbelievable. This is brilliant. And you know what, Paul? It was therapeutic. It was going back to the core.
You're a nerd. I love it.
It is. I still have this accounting nerd part inside me that likes understanding how things are presented.
We all do, mate. A well-formed team ledger, I tell you.
This is like 11 o'clock at night. I'm up there doing this.
It was amazing. Got shivers. It's like a balanced Excel spreadsheet.
So look, this is ours to lose. Now, what do we want you to do about this? Well, you'll make of it what you want to. Maybe you'll go back to your firm and say, hey, guys, what do we really need to be doing right for our clients? Maybe you'll get on the phone to your clients and actually say, hey, am I doing a good job? Am I doing what you want me to do? Because, like, accountants keep talking about how happy you keep saying, I know what we do. Accountants don't do NPS scores, Net Promoter Scores. It doesn't happen. And here's the warning. Here's the downside. If there's any commission, I'm not suggesting there isn't. I've got absolutely no intelligence that there is. But geez, post-CPA, our member bodies who are legally mandated to enforce standards and now potentially aren't looking after members' interests, I'm not pulling a far bow. I can tell you, Paul, it's not the big four firms who are going to get belted. It's not the big four firms who are going to have devastating impacts. It'll be little guys, because what we're seeing.
And we've seen that in Australia with the Tax Practitioners Board and the ATO together saying, we're going to need to start fixing this technical deficiency, because clearly the professional bodies haven't, and no one looks like they're going to. So, listeners, what do you think? Are we on the money, off the money? What do you where do you think, is it ours to lose, or will it be taken off us, or will the most likely option, the wheels will just roll, there'll be ever-changing tax, Brexit in the UK.
There's every chance that we'll just wake up tomorrow and the sun will rise again.
Absolutely.
But is that the day we want to live in?
Yes.
Or should we take
Groundhog
control?
Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day again.
More tax returns. Anyway, all right. Well done,
I wish people
David.
Could see how big your smile was when you said more tax returns.
More tax returns.
More tax returns.
Oh, love it. All right, David. Another great week. Thank you, listeners. Reach out. David, you're gesticulating wildly.
Congratulations to the winners of the Jason Andrew Stark Naked Numbers book. We'll notify you directly. Paul, almost 100 people put their names in. So I'll tell you what, any brands out there who want to engage some accountants, get in touch with us, because clearly we seem to have a good channel. And, well, Jason's written a great book that's really important to accountants. That probably helps.
Absolutely. Otherwise, have an awesome week. Feel free to reach out at freedommentoring.com for all your Freedom Online Accounting Firm training. Bespoke mentoring.
If I just stay silent, will you keep adding words?
Yep. AI.
Paul.
Blockchain. All good. Have a great week, everyone.
See ya.
Thanks again for listening to an episode of From the Trenches. David and I love to hear from listeners, so you can reach out if you've got feedback or story ideas. Get in touch. I can be reached on Twitter at @PaulMeissner_ or on LinkedIn, Paul Meissner.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, Boyar, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.
From the Trenches.